So today, I got a question about thought, daydreaming, planning, imagination. So I am going to talk about thoughts. So I think hopefully I will answer the question. If not, and also Stephen might look later at, I think on Friday, he might look at creativity and imagination in Buddhism, if he gets to it, but normally he might. So hopefully I will answer that question. So tonight I want to look at mental patterning, because I could also look at emotional patterning, physical patterning, but since I have only so much time, and since a lot of you talk about thoughts, I thought let's look at mental patterning. And what I said to that applies to the rest, actually. So it seems to me that when we sit in meditation, actually it gives us an opportunity to see our patterning. And so in a way that the meditation is not so much to have a permanent state of mindfulness or whatever, but I think it's an exploration, and the meditation, the awareness, in a way seeing where do we go. To me that's what is interesting. We are sitting in meditation, we try to be aware, we try to focus, we try to concentrate, and we are distracted. And it's kind of in a way interesting to look, where do I go, what do I think, how do I think it. And if we think human being, we think, we feel, we have physical sensation, and they are basic functioning. I think this is what is important to see. This is our basic functioning, to think, to feel, to have physical sensation. So the meditation is not trying to get rid of that, because that's what is being human. And so in a way, there is this basic functioning to, in a way, manifest, to express our potential. However, over time, life happens, unfolds, there is our own tendency, there is a society we're born in, there is a family, the condition that we encounter, the choice we made. And over time, we develop a complex conditioning. And we start to develop habits. It's like groove in ourselves that we go a certain way. And so you kind of like have mental groove, you have physical groove, emotional groove, like you're more likely to go that way, you're more likely to react that way. And often these grooves have been survival mechanism. And in a way the meditation, I think, can help us to see we don't need to behave that way anymore, and also to bring back. So we go into this patterning, and in a way, the more we think a certain way, the more we feel a certain way, then the more it's going to be like this. And then the meditation is to bring us back to the functioning. So it's not to stop the thought, the feeling, the sensation, but it's to bring it back more to a creative functioning. To me, this is very much the way the meditation works. And over time, as I did meditation and as I developed awareness, I started to see, as I mentioned already a little, that there were these three levels of patterns. You had the intense level, you had the habitual level, and you had the light level. I'll explain a little, giving example. The first level, the one we're actually more aware of, and then we feel generally very stuck, is when something has happened relatively recently, and then there is this intense, obsessive experience. We keep thinking, we go round and round and round. And it's very intense. For example, long ago, I phoned a friend, And I said, how are you? And she said, life is terrible. Everything is terrible. It's always terrible. So I said, but what happened? Nothing happened. It is always terrible. It will always be terrible. So after 10 minutes, finally, I got her to say, yes, yesterday something happened. It was painful. I was anxious about it. And then we could address it. But the always, we could not address. There is no way to address that. So that's when something happened. And then generally it's a shock to the system. And we have to see that often we're conscious of it then. And we think, I need to do something about it. Meditation should help me to be with this. But it doesn't work that way. Then the next one is more what I would call the habitual tendencies. Like when we just, it's habitual. We have certain way to be, certain way to respond. And sometimes we know them, but for sure our friends, our family know them. They know that, you know, if somebody say this, you will react this way, and so sometimes one is careful. I remember once, at the beginning of our marriage with Stephen, we had a big family dinner. In France, it's very customary. And there was a big silence. And so Stephen, wanting to be the gentleman, thought, oh, maybe I could introduce a nice subject of conversation. And he said, have you, it was election time, have you voted today? And we all look at each other and we thought, oh no, 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 no. Here we go. And of course, my brother-in-law reacted in the way we thought he would react. And we had a 30-minute tirade. And Stephen, after that, was much more careful. So in a way, that we know, you know, there is this tendency to react in a certain way. And then there is a light manifestation, which is in a way just being human. And this is the easiest place to deal with our mental patterning. This is very important to see. And to me, the meditation helps us to see the different level, help us to be more conscious of the light level. And if we work at the light level, then we help the next two levels. And so in a way to see that, that's what I think is important to see. We're not always obsessive. We're not always stuck in our habits. Sometimes it's just light. And so to become more conscious of them when they are light. For example, for me, a light manifestation of mental habit is what I call luggage making. I travel a lot, so often I have to fill my suitcase. So I find myself sitting in meditation thinking, I am going to go to Mexico in 9 months' time, what should I put in my luggage? And then I think, 9 months, it's a bit far ahead to do that, you know? And so I see it, I see, oh, luggage making. I don't need to do it now. If it's in a week, yes, I can start to prepare. But 9 months ahead, I don't need to do that. So I see it, and then I come back. So in a way, just to see that we kind of, you know, go a certain way. So that's what I like to look at. Because in a way, the thoughts are the activity of the mind, the functioning of the mind. And the meditation with the awareness help us to see what kind of thought do we have, what is it that takes me away, and the most important point is that generally our thoughts are fairly repetitive. This is not a judgment. This is just a fact. So it's not to judge the repetition of the thought, but to see it and to realize, I have thought this for the 100th time, do I need to do this one more time? To me, this is a little to see, I have been at this for a little while. Maybe through the help of the meditation, I can try to come back to the moment with the help of the breath, the body, or the sound. So in a way, the meditation kind of helps us to see how do our thoughts proliferate. agitators, confuse us, sometimes are a burden to us. And so meditation can help us to see that what distracts us, occupy us, obsess us, if it does that in meditation, generally it happens so in daily life as well. But in the meditation, we can see it more because there is nothing else to occupy us, actually. So we kind of, sometimes it's a little stark to see, oh, I do all this thing, I have all this pattern. So the intense level, recent condition, something happened and you just go round and round and it's relentless. And it's very important to see that it can be positive. You can have, you know, I remember many years ago, I had sent many letters to various foundations to get some funding to do some research on women and Buddhism. And for a year, I did not hear anything. And then one morning, I got three letters giving me the funding, three times over. So I was ecstatic. And at the same time, my job then was to be a house cleaner. So I went to do my 3 hours of house cleaning. And suddenly I realized, I was like, this is fantastic. And I was and I really could not do my job properly because I was so not there. I was really somewhere else. So then I thought, okay, this is a little too much. Right now I need to do the house cleaning, wash the bathtub. So then I sat down just for 3 minutes and I just came back to the breath. Just came back to the breath. And then once I was calmed down, then I was still happy. I was still joyful, but I was not disturbed. And then I could do my job. Or you can have something negative which happened. This happened to me recently. I went to South Africa 2-3 years ago and I arrived there and then I phoned home and my mother said, oh, we've been burgled. And they tried Steve came when she was not there and they took money and things, etc., etc. And that was a shock. And she dealt with it as she could on her side, being in France. And me, I was at South Africa and I was starting a retreat, teaching a retreat. And so I did the meditation with the people. And a day went by. And then suddenly I saw that there was two themes going round and round and round. First one, security. You know, how can I make the house secure and the door and safe and da da da. And then I thought, okay, no need to do that. I am not there, no point, so I let it go. The next one was very interesting. I was actually plotting revenge against the thief, trying to find, you know, put like a kind of a mouse trap somewhere to get them. Then I thought, this is not useful. And then I just let it be. But I could see that for a day it had to go through the system. I think, in a way, things, when you have a shock, it's a shock to the whole system, so it has to go through the whole organism. But if we develop the power of creative awareness, then at some point you see it. You say, oh, right, that's what I am doing. And I did it for a day, now it's enough. I can let it be. And then I can just do the meditation. So, in a way, what we can do then is to, when the thing is very intense, it's first to see that it's conditional. Is because of certain condition. To be careful from the thing being intense, not to identify and say it is always intense like that. It has always been like this, it will always be like this, because then you really make it even more intense. So in a way, with the help of the awareness, try to keep it where it is, which is in this moment and just a little before. Something happened, it's a shock to the system, it has to go through. And then with the help of the meditation, with the help of the focusing, to try to come back just for a brief period to the breath, to the sound, to the body, just to bring space. It will be very short, maybe 30 seconds. and then you go back, and then again a little space, and then it won't stop it, but it will diminish its intensity. And then will the inquiry to see that you are not just that. Because this is a difficulty when something happens, suddenly you are just that. You reduce, you know, I could not reduce my existence to this person who had been burgled. Yes, it was unpleasant, but my whole life was not just about that. So in a way, to see with the experiential inquiry, your life is not just that. That there is more thing in your life. That although this part is painful, there are other parts who are not painful. So in a way to, again, bring some space. Then, you have the next level, which are the habits, which are the patterns. It's kind of, in a way the mind works. What we often think about. What I would say, it's very repetitive. We have a tendency to think a certain way. And so I'm going to go through a few of those which you might know yourself. And to me, what is interesting in terms of the pattern, the habitual level, is with the help of the meditation, we can start to know, I would nearly say that the thought have a texture, that you kind of get like a feel for the thought, that kind of, you know, that you have built up over time. And you can see, the more you see that feel, that texture, the more you can recognize them early. So the first one I mentioned already a little is daydreaming. But it's very important to see that these patterns actually all have a function. Like for example, with daydreaming, I would say the function is imagination. And it's useful to imagine things. There is nothing against imagination. It can be very creative. But to see, when is it kind of like imagination which is creative, and when it is a daydream, which actually will lead to frustration. When I was in Korea, sitting my 10 hours a day for 3 months at a time, I had two favorite daydreams. First one, I am going to go to a hermitage, I'm going to practice out, I'm going to awaken, I'm going to save everybody. So I was daydreaming about meditation, but I was not meditating until I thought, hey, that's not meditation. So I dropped that. The next one, which lasted a little longer, this was like from my childhood, the great dream of being a kung fu expert. So I would have this huge film about becoming a kung fu expert and then the savior of the world, and it was wonderful. Until one day, I tried it in reality. I went to a kung fu class in Korea. I lasted 2 hours. I don't like exercise. I don't like to be told what to do. There was no way I was going to learn kung fu. But you see how, you know, you could be in your daily life, and you could be sitting at home and thinking, ah, my husband, if he was a romantic, kind, lovely husband, you know, that would be so nice. And if my children would be really quiet and working hard at school, wouldn't it be nice? And so you build this wonderful dream, and then they come back, and they're really kind of, you know, tired and messy. And then you see, but why are they like this? You know, in the dream they were like that. And so in a way it can lead to frustration. We have to be careful with this comparing mind, getting stuck onto the daydreaming. So in a way to see, when is it useful to imagine, to create something? And when does I go into what I call this mono-reality? And to me the texture, what is interesting is the texture of daydreaming is gooey. It's like a chocolate cake. It's like, it's like you're sitting there and you, ooh, it's so nice, the time will pass so nicely, I want to go there. And so in a way it's not easy to resist this, because you're sitting here, you have pain in the knee, you know, and then it's so much more tempting, you know, to really go into the daydream. And so I did it for many years, this daydreaming, until finally the power of the creative awareness. I sat in meditation on a retreat, and that 1 hour, I decided I was going to do the meditation, and I was not going to daydream. That was my resolution. So I sat, and I could see the back here. For an hour, I kept doing that. The beginning of it coming back, the beginning of it coming back. What was interesting, after that hour, it was finished. I have never done it ever again. And I can't even kind of raise it. I can't ever raise it. There is no power in the pattern anymore. But if I want to imagine something, of course I can imagine. So it was, for me, it was a very interesting experience. Then you have ruminating. And ruminating generally as a kind of a time lapse. It's kind of, you start with, you're sitting here, nothing is happening, more or less. And then you remember something bad somebody did. That was so bad, that was so painful, and you go round and round and round, then it becomes painful now. And generally you move to the future and you plot revenge, and they'll say this, but I'll say that, and I'll get them. Very compassionate activity in meditation. And in a way, to see the past, you cannot do anything about it, and also you don't need to bring it here. It's past, it's gone. We can learn from the past, but we need to leave it where it was. And the future, the thing is, whatever you can dream they're going to say, they're not going to say it because they're not in your script, they're not aware. It's your script, not theirs. And the only thing you can do is cultivate your potential in this moment so that when you meet them, you creatively respond to that situation. And so ruminating comes from reflection. And of course, at times, it's good to reflect upon the past, but in a creative way, to see what happened, what were the circumstances, what can I learn from it? And of course, it's sometimes good to prepare from the future, but I think it's more important to prepare inside ourselves. Maybe prepare the way we could say something the least harmful way. Maybe we could try to play and to be creative, but not to repeat something. As soon as you repeat again and again the same thing, then in a way you kind of, in a way, you become stuck, you become limited. Another one is rehearsing. Sometimes people do that. They sit in meditation and they rehearse what they're going to say, all the experience they have had here. That's one thing you often do. Or you rehearse conversation. Or it's interesting, this kind of rehearsing. And then you try to remember what you've rehearsed so that you don't forget it. So it gets kind of a little fairly busy, this different kind of thing running around. And to try to see when it comes to it, it will come the way it will come. Trying to, you know, just come back here, just trying to be present to the whole experience. Otherwise, there is fabricating. And fabricating there, it's more that there is a feeling, a little of fear or anxiety. There is a little kind of agitation, little. And then you start to create a whole thing out of nothing. And then the meditation tomorrow can be useful. This questioning, asking, but is this true, what I'm telling myself? Once I was teaching a retreat, and in the afternoon, a whole afternoon, one lady was crying. So I was worried, and I asked her, but you know, how are you? She said, I'm fine, don't worry. So, and then at the end of the retreat, she told us, she was sitting in meditation, and suddenly she thought, oh, my cat is dying because my friend is not feeding my cat, and my cat is going to die without me. But the friend was feeding the cat was perfectly fine. And so to see sometimes we kind of create this whole thing, especially in the silence sometimes, we're in so silent retreat, and it's like somebody looks at you funny. Why do they look at me funny? You know, when you start to build this huge thing and maybe they had something in the eyes and they were not looking at you in any way. So anyway, to see, to kind of slightly question, is this true? Of course, again, this is back to imagination. And sometimes it is useful to be careful, to think, you know, what if this happened, but to try to be careful, is it helpful, is it beneficial, or is it kind of really repetitive and really frightening in a way. Then you have judging. And judging is like, you know, it's like we are kind of like a little like judges and we never take holiday. This is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. And we like this. And the problem a little with the awareness is that you can use awareness to judge even more. So then you have the judging of the judging of the judging of the judging. You know, and this is very tiring. And judging, we have to become friends with judging. We have to be very careful with judging. We have to be very soft. Because if we say no, no judging, then you have the judging of the no judge. It goes very complex. So just to see that that's what you might have a tendency to do. But the judging is useful. I mean, it's a function. And this is what will become wisdom. I need to judge that this is a clock, and this is a bell. And if, I mean, it might ring a bit the clock, but not much. And I sure won't read the time from the bell. So you need to discriminate. But to be careful when it kind of like is nearly constant. And so, you know, to see when we get into this judging mood, to see, ah, judging. Okay, remember your intention to be aware, to be awake, come back to the breath. Come back to the sound. So really not judging it, but just making a decision, a choice to, I don't need to judge at this moment. I prefer to focus, to be aware. Then you have comparing. And comparing is quite painful. It's kind of a sideline of judging. And you can compare up, which is not, I mean, not so bad for yourself, but it might not be so pleasant for others. So you are up and they're down, oh, poor little one, I'm okay here. So I mean, it's not necessarily pleasant, especially if you are arrogant. But often what we do is more negative comparing, that we're down and we look up and they have everything and I have nothing. And that makes you generally really, it's very painful. I used to have a friend like this. She used to see everything she did not have. And she did not look at what she had. And so whenever I went to see her, I used to spend half an hour trying to think of something that was worse than her so that she could feel better compared to me. It was hard work to do that. Because it seemed to me so painful, because you always feel something is missing. And what was beautiful is that finally over time she dropped that. And now she can really see, appreciate what she has in her life. And then there is more of a balancing. You know, what is it I might need, I can try to have from a place where you already have something, you can appreciate it. Then you have planning. And planning is to see that planning is, again, useful. We need to plan to come here. It's a basic function of the mind. But then what happened with planning is that you just plan. And then you have the planning of the planning and the remembering of the planning of the planning. And this can become very stressful. And I know for myself, I used to do that a little before I did meditation, and my stomach was often very bad from that. And then I did meditation, and then I was much better. And then suddenly one day, I found that I had this pain in the stomach again. And I thought, what's happening? The food is okay, what is happening? And I realized I was going to go to South Africa for the first time for 2 months, and I kept planning, remembering the planning, don't forget this, think of that, don't forget. And again, and as soon as I saw it, I said, wait a minute, I prefer to forget something than to have the pay. And straight away, I stopped this kind of endless planning. So if you find yourself doing planning in that way, and planning is generally very repetitive. And so what I would recommend in meditation as an exercise, only do 5 planning of any one thing. When it's gone round 5 times, okay, now I stop. Next thing, 5 times. And then generally over time you stop. And you just do it when it's useful. And then when you don't need, you see, start to see, I've been doing this a little while. It's kind of like going around. You kind of go around a little in circle. Nothing new is happening. You're kind of just repeating, just to notice that. And then, okay, I can drop it. And I can just come back to the breath, to the body, to the sound. Another thing we do is counting. And once we had this wonderful fellow on a retreat, he said, oh yes, because I was talking of this pattern, he said, oh yes, me, I count. I sit in meditation and I count the money in the bank, I count the shoe in the closet, I count. And then he said, but I am an accountant. So I mean, yeah, like a kind of habit from work. But to see that, you know, I mean, Stephen used to do this when we were in Korea. In Korea, you walk around. So you sit in a square and you walk around it. And he used to count, you know, because he had to do this, you know, 10 hours a day, 10 times. And he used to count, you know, how many kilometers, you know, it was one time it was that. And if you multiply by 6 and you multiply by so many weeks, and he had, I don't know, how many kilometers he had walked. I mean, very entertaining, but I'm not sure it was meditation. And this often we do in general. What I would come from this counting, we have this measuring. Again, measuring is functional. But you see, when it becomes a habit, you measure what you do. How good a Buddhist am I? How good a meditator am I? Am I up? Am I down? Or if you look at other people, often I thought when I lived in community, Buddhist community, there was this measuring. And often you would use the teaching to accuse others. You are not mindful. Like there was a little kind of, you know, scale, and you know, they really gone down on the scale. Or you are non-compassionate, you know. It's kind of like there was this scale, you were up or down. And I think also partners do this. You know, often when people live together, you know, how much good to me has he done? How much bad has he done? You know, and you kind of go up, and if not done enough good, then, you know, things kind of, you know, we must be balanced here. And so in a way, to be careful with this measuring, when we're measuring ourselves, measuring others, in a way which can, again, start to really fix and really kind of create expectation, which I think can be very painful. So in a way, the problem is not with the function of the thought. I think this is just natural. But it's when it proliferates, when it becomes habits, and then it kind of, you know, hamper the functionality. And then it's really, in a way, color what we say, color what we do. And so trying through the help of the meditation, with this non-judgmental awareness, seeing what is it I think? And how can I bring it back more to its creative functioning? How can I feed less this kind of, you know, repetition? How can I come back to what I would call more spaciousness? I can think if I want to, and I don't if I don't need to necessarily. Then you have the light occupying thought. And this is something, you know, when you don't have so much anything intense and you don't have anything very habitual anymore, then it's more very light. And what is it very interesting in meditation, because you have the feeling that you're aware. You have the feeling, yes, I'm aware of the breath, and then choop, you go away. Back to the breath, go away. And then if you look, often what's going on is either a shopping list, you kind of, you know, just making various shopping lists, or light planning, like my luggage, or trains of thought. You know, you start with Aunt Elga and you in New York and you have no idea how you got there, you know. And you have this strange feeling that you're aware and then a little out. Aware, a little out. And so it's interesting to really know the light, to really see what is it I'm thinking, where do I go, and to see, can I play with it, can I come back from it, because it's much easier to come back from it. So the problem is not so much with having the thought, is in a way, are we feeding that thought, are we feeding that pattern, or do we see it and then gently come back to what is necessary in the moment. Do I need to think and to reflect about something or not? I know for myself, when I write books, and what I do is, before, I sit in meditation, and I used to have this fantastic idea for my books. I was sitting and, yes, this idea, wonderful idea, yes, 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 you know, going this way, going that way. And then I would, you know, leave after the end of the meditation, I would go and write it down, you know, the greatest idea in the universe. I would never use it. I would not use it. I was just occupying my mind, distracting myself. And so what I found worked much better was actually when I was at home, when I wrote a book, to just throw ideas, I would just throw them at any time in the day. I would just, yes, that would be good to look at this. Yeah, and that way, and that way. And then I would let them be. I would not think about it. I would just let it gestate, so to speak, underneath. I would not do anything consciously. And then I would see it at the computer, and then it would come. It's like there was, in the space, there would be this germination. So to me, in a way, what we're doing, that's what, when I talk of creative awareness, creative engagement, is that we create a space in which something new can happen. And that's what, to me, that it can be very useful in terms of developing creative awareness. Also to see that from light, we can very quickly go from light, habitual, intense, if we feed it. So in a way, to notice that. You know, you have a light thought, and 2 minutes later, you have this obsession. So you know, to see, ooh, if I go there, this is what might happen. And that's why what I like to finish with, and I have a little time, is with a text from the Buddha, which is called the Vitaka Santana Sutta, which I think is number 25 or 20-something in the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle-length saying. And it's a very short sutra, just two pages. And in it, it talks about how to deal with thought. And so it's 5 methods of how to deal with difficult thought. And so, of course, for him, it is applying to people who meditate. If you have a really heavy negative thought, born out of greed, hatred, of delusion, do this. So I'm going to go through them. So first one. You're having this, you know, really obsessional, heavy thought coming from greed, hatred, of delusion, and the Buddha says, change it, turn it to the positive. And each time he gives a simile, he says it's like if you have a big peg stuck, you use a little peg to make it come out. And so, for example, one day I was waiting for somebody. You know, she was supposed to come at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock, she was not there. And I could have gone, really, you know, who do you think she is? And no. And I did not do this. And I thought, there might be a good reason why she's not coming. So I phoned her and said, I thought it was next week. So that was resolved. So to see, you know, sometimes somebody does something bad and you think that everything they do is bad. And instead to see, yes, they might have done something which was painful, but then generally not always doing that. Sometimes they also have done good things for yourself. So in a way to just balance it out, balance out the negative with the positive. Then the Buddha says, if the thought continues and is still difficult, painful, etc., second method is to see the peril of the thought. And the simile is a little gruesome. He says, it is like if you were thinking you had this beautiful jewel around your neck, and suddenly you look, actually it's made of carcasses, And then you would just drop it because it's not what you thought it was. And so he's basically saying, to me, it's kind of becoming aware of the trigger. What is it that takes me to very dark places? What is it that sent me into this poor me spiral? And so to start to recognize that generally there is like inner and outer condition, which then takes you somewhere. At the beginning of our marriage with Stephen, when he was going away, I used to get into terrible funk. After 3-4 days, I was really in a very bad mood. And he would phone and I was really not friendly. And he had not done anything, apart from not being there. So it happened once, it happened twice, and I thought, what goes on? What is going on? This is painful, this is not useful. So I started to look. Next time he goes, I look. I look my mind, first day fine, second day fine, and then I see the thought come up. And I see, this is the thought, that if I follow this, I'm going to go there. I don't want to go there, so then I did something else. I went for a walk or I read a book, and it passed. And then I was much nicer on the telephone. And I just had to do it twice. And now I can't remember that thought. And it has never happened again. And it showed me that actually the power of the thought is not as great as we think it is, actually. So that's the second one. The third one is even more interesting in terms of the fact that the whole week we've been saying, be aware, be aware, be aware. Third one, he says, lack of attention. Turn away from it. And he said it's like if you saw something in front of you which was kind of really ugly or really disgusting, and you would just turn your look away. And so to me, this is very interesting. It shows again that the Buddha is pragmatic. And that's why I would say, when something is intense, you don't have to focus on it because it's so intense, you focused on it anyway. And to actually, sometime, to move away from it, either with the help of meditation or if it's daily life, with what I call creative distraction. Going for a walk, talking to somebody, reading a book, listening to some music, whatever it might be for the person. So to see that, not to stay with it because it might actually increase it. Then there is a fourth method, and that's a little, what he says, the simile might explain more what he says, but he says, go inside the thought and question the form of it. And the example he gives is that you are doing walking meditation, and suddenly you think, I'm doing walking meditation, but maybe I could do standing meditation. So you do standing meditation and you think, maybe I could do sitting meditation. Sitting meditation, maybe I could do lying down meditation. And so he said you go from the one who requires the most energy to the one who is the easiest. And I think what he is telling us here is actually to look inside the thought and question it. In a way, do I have to think this way? Could I think something else? Could I think something different? So in a way, is to try so that we're not so identified, so stuck with the thought, and see more, what am I thinking? Could I think differently? Could I look at it in a different way? Then there is a fifth method, and then the therapist here should not listen to this. And the fifth method is with the mind, subdue the mind. And the example is wonderful. And he says it's like a big man hold the little man, and the little man is, you know, the big man is holding him. Personally, I don't interpret it as repression. Personally, what this is telling me is actually I am stronger. I have more power than anyone thought. Because generally what we think is that suddenly we have a thought and it's like, the thought is more powerful than us. But if we look into a thought, what is it? It's just a little firing in the brain. And I think the whole organism can be more stronger than just any one thought. So to me, it's more about the power of our potential and not being stuck with a thought. In the same way that, you know, you could... recently in France, there was this thing in the newspaper, on television. Amazing. Two kids, 15 years old, had a thought. And they thought, we're going to go on holiday, we need some money. So, in order to get some money, they thought, well, we're going to hijack a van, you know, like a money van, a bring van, you know, like kind of the big kind of, you know, van. And we're going to attack it with, you know, what the policemen throw in the crowd, the tear gas. We're going to attack it with tear gas. So these two kids got to the van, throw the tear gas, and of course the guy came out with guns and they shoot them, and they ended up in hospital and then possibly in jail later on. But, I mean, they had an idea, but it sure was not a good idea to follow. So in a way, I think the fifth one is about that, to kind of, you know, maybe not follow all your idea and think, that one maybe is not a good one. Maybe I should restrain it. So that's what I wanted to say today. Are there any questions or comments?
That return for years and years even, and I consider myself an inquirative person and rather aware and practicing, and I don't feel like seeing the pattern helps it disappear. I mean, to my experience, maybe I haven't seen it clearly enough or deep enough, but I feel like there are specific issues in my life where I go so deep and I know the pattern from all directions and it's still there.
Yeah, so first thing to point out that I don't, this is not a way of what I call pattern eradication. But I think,
really?
No, this is not, some yes, but some not. Some we can dissolve, like the, for example, the daydreaming with me, that some we can. But some, if they're very deep, then actually the only thing we can do is actually make them less intense and last less long. That's what we can do. And very likely, I would not be surprised if this has happened to you. But I think if we have to be careful, certain will go, will be dissolved, and certain not. Also, to see that what we are building is a power of creative awareness. And I must say to me, you know, the daydreaming, it took me maybe 20 years before finally I was able to stand firm. You know, it's not overnight. I mean, personally, I have a tendency to be a little lively and I would say irritated, angry. And I would not say I am not angry anymore. But when I'm angry, it's much less intense. It's very rare now that I lose my cool or anything like that. Very, extremely rare. Then so now I still get irritated. I know the condition which make me irritated. And also I can see, generally I am irritated. It lasts very, very little. Like, I feel it. I might even say something. But generally it lasts 5-10 minutes, when before, I mean, it used to last days. It really was a very heavy pattern, very heavy. So I think one has to see that first, that personally, I feel it's better to be angry for 5 minutes than to be angry for a week. To be angry for a day instead of a month. I think this is a big improvement in the pattern. I think it's very important to see that. Also, I think there is this, what I call this fourth step in terms of patterning and in terms of the intensity of the pattern. First, in a way, we see ourselves at the end of it. you go through the cycle of reaction, and then at the end of it you see, ah, I did this. So you have to do this a few times to see that's a pattern, that's what you do. Then the next one, and this is generally the most frustrating one, is when you are in the middle of it. You are full inside the pattern, inside the manifestation of the pattern. You're angry, jealous, whatever it is you do. And you're so aware that you are in it. And it doesn't make a difference. And this is very frustrating, because before you did not know it, now you know. But actually, although it does not change it, you still behave the same way. Actually, generally it's a little less intense and it lasts just a little less long. Then you start, and this is to me what is important to see, it's not just about self-understanding. It's also about conditions. To me, the third step is when you start to see what are the conditions that are more likely to give rise to this. Inner condition, outer condition, to see the trigger and to start more at the beginning than toward the end, because then you're gone, to start to try to change a little, what I call creative distraction, to try to see the trigger and to recognize the trigger and to work a little with that. Like for example, if one is very busy, or when one is very tired, one gets very irritated. That used to happen to me. I would be very tired, and then I would look for someone to be angry with. And generally, Stephen was around, so I used to look for him and to be irritated with him, and he like, you know, what's going on here? I've not done anything. And then I realized it's nothing to do with him. It's the fact that I'm tired. And when I'm tired, I am more irritable. So then when I started to see I was tired, I used to go to rest. Because, I mean, I am self-employed, so I could go and rest for half an hour, and then I was a much nicer person. So anyway, it's kind of to see. It's not just inside. You cannot just tell yourself, don't be like this, if the conditions are very difficult. I think one has to really learn to see the condition, to work with the condition. And the problem with the outer condition is that there is only so much we can change them. So, you know, it's sometimes, you know, it's not that easy. So in a way, it's kind of like working with that also. And then there is a moment, and that I think we need to have a lot of power of awareness, and it does not work for everything. Again, it depends. Is when you see yourself before you're going to go into the pattern. You see yourself, you're going to do the same thing you generally do. I used to have this pattern. When somebody hurt me, I would not look at them, I would not talk to them for days. When I was a child, it would be for weeks, you know. I would freeze a person. And then one day, finally, after lots of meditation, I saw myself going to do it. I saw myself going to freeze off somebody. And then I thought, maybe you can do something different. And then there was this fear, this great fear. How can I do something different when I never ever did something different? And I realized why we don't change. We prefer the fear of the known than the non-fear of the unknown. But I had the power of the creative awareness to go over that, to turn, smile to the person, talk to her. And I felt this ease. I was so peaceful. And I thought, why did not I do this before? It's so nice. Because I did not have enough power. So the power of the habit was stronger than the power of the awareness. And after that, I never did it again. But because of compassion. Because in that moment, I was not identified with the pattern anymore. Then I could see it in a more spacious way, and I saw it was so painful for me, and it was so painful for the other person to do this, to ignore someone's existence. It's very painful. So after that, I never did it. But I found different way to deal with people who are difficult, in different way, from avoiding to talking to different, depends on how they are. maybe. Ah. This depends on the person. You see, I think if the people who are more like what I would call the thinking type, what I would call creative thinking, who use their thinking a lot and who are very lively thinking, then in a way to do this is what you describe. You then go into kind of not yourself more. And then at that level, it's very important, as you say, to come back to something which is not of thought, if we can, with creative distraction, with sound, something to do with the body, moving, creativity of a different nature.
And where does this thought go? When does one do this thought?
Well,
at what point, when is it okay to deal with the turbulence?
But as I said, meditative creative thinking. Do it for 30 minutes every day. If you have something which really is on your mind, every day, 30 minutes, you just think about this and nothing else. But then after 30 minutes, you stop. And then you know, tomorrow I'll do it again. So then you create the space. To me, this is sometimes like, you know, if something happened to me a few years ago, something happened with another teacher. We had a little run-in. And unpleasant. Anyway. And then after that, I wanted to write an apology, and at the same time, I still did not agree for ethical reason. So I did not want, you know, so I came, I remember being in bed, going around. One time, I could say it this way, more vengeful. Second time around, a little less vengeful. Third time around, more accommodating. And finally, five times, I had it. You know, no vengefulness, but just steadiness, stating my point and expressing it in a way which was, yes, I can send this. That's why when you want to write something, don't send it straight away. Think about it first, I would agree. But then to leave it, you know, I was in bed, I could not write, and then I got to this where I thought, oh, that's okay. Then I left it. I did not go round and round with it. I left it. And then when I went to the computer, I improved on it a little. So yes, at some time you have to look at things, but try to see that you're not caught in the going round which kind of feed it, but more something which kind of bring a little creativity in it so that you can adapt it, you can move it around. It doesn't go into what I call the negative spiral. Okay. Last one.
Did you have experience with other disciplines or just with meditation? And how do you feel in general? You know, I was thinking about Byron Katie or other therapies. Or, you know.
I mean, personally, this is the only thing I have ever done. I only did meditation. So, and it worked for me. But I'm not saying it's the only method which will work for other people. And it's true that when I read Byron Katie, I thought what I say is very similar to what I say. At the same time, when I was starting to teach like that, people kept saying, but this is cognitive therapy. And I thought, what's cognitive therapy? Never heard of it. So I went to read about it, and I thought, oh, yes, you know. But to me, the Vitaka Santana Sutta showed me that the Buddha was possibly the first cognitive therapist, you know. So, in a way, different people have different way to deal with the mind. I mean, we all have the same, there is suffering, and people recognize there is patterning, and then is what works, what speaks to us. Because sometimes to people, sometimes I think it's as helpful for some people to do meditation, but also maybe some Tai Chi, something to do with the body. Sometimes I think it's very useful to also do creative things, but not not to impress anybody. You know, they just to be creative, to just, you know, do wood carving for the sake of it, or painting for the sake of it, just to create something, to create the space in which something can come up. And I think that can be very nurturing. So there is many different ways. I would not say meditation is the only way. That's why I think creative distraction, I think, is also can help, you know, to find something. You know, I mean, it can be exercise, it can be many different things. We should not think that meditation is going to sort me out. But meditation can help me, of course, with other discipline if I find some which can be helpful for me. And we must...
One question. Perhaps it's early days. I'm doing it just 2 days now. It's very boring. Think about the breath coming in and coming out. After 5 minutes, I'm still bored.
Yeah, no, this is this is a common experience. On a first retreat, this is a very common experience. And what to say, it's kind of a, I think it's a stay. I mean, if you want to continue to do it, it might be boring for a while until you might find the point in it. I think you might find more the point in it when you go home. When you go home, you might find more, yes, there is something in it.
You don't find it boring anymore.
I only found it difficult at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I never found it boring. At the beginning, what I found was that I would sit there and I could not breathe. You know, I was not used to sit still. I was not used to just sit still for 10 hours a day, you know. And so it was like, you know, I did not find it especially boring. I just find, you know, it was difficult to do bodily, mentally, everything. But no, I've never found it boring. I just do it. For me, the meditation is just, I do it. I just cultivate. And that's it. But I think I have great faith. So I think if you have great faith, you have a very different attitude. But at the beginning, you don't have great faith. I mean, you have to do it for a while, and then you think, this works. Or you might decide, you know, I prefer to do, I don't know, basketball or something else, you know. One has to find out. But it takes a little time, generally. Okay, so we have to stop here, and there is walking meditation.